So I stayed up ridiculously late last night, partly to finish an episode of Transmedia for the rest of us, which I need to upload this morning. But also partly because my wife and daughter aren't here. They've gone away for a few days. And I get very unsettled when they're not here. Not because I'm worried, and not because, you know, I don't know where they are or anything like that. I've found when they're not here, I just can't quite... I need to do things in the house. I need to keep myself busy. And also, a weird little thing, perhaps, is when my wife's not here, or, you know, usually it's these days, it's when my wife and daughter aren't here. Come kind of the evening or the night, I can't sleep in our bed. It's a weird thing. I just feel the bed is very big and very lonely, and you know, I tend, if I do try and sleep in the bed when they're not here, because quite often also my daughter wakes up in the night, and we have this kind of not policy, but it's okay for our daughter to wake up in the night and come in and sleep in our bed. We don't limit that at all. We limit it when she asks before she wants to go to bed. Very occasionally we allow her to sleep in our bed. But if she most of the time if she asks, she's five, by the way, most of the time she asks at bedtime, we will say, no, you have to go to sleep in your own bed. And we'll read her lots of stories and all that kind of stuff. And it's really been paying off because the last really good period of time, she's actually not really been waking up in the night. In fact, she's only done it a few times in the last, say, month, for example. And those times, it's been, you know, I've woken up, gone straight in and... you know, picked her up and brought her into our bed, and then she goes straight back to sleep again. I'm sure the parenting manuals would probably have a lot to say about that. But certainly my wife and I feel that we're a family, and it's, you know, if she wakes up in the night, she's obviously woken up because she's had some kind of bad dream or something that's made her feel insecure. So we feel, you know, the act of actually saying, come on, giving her a cuddle and bringing her in, putting her in our bed, gives her back that security that she needs at that moment. But like I say, if she asks at bedtime, the majority of the time we say, no, you have to go to sleep in your own bed. So that's partly why when I'm here on my own, and I'm not kind of here on my own, the dog is here too, but he's by no means allowed on any of the beds in our household. He's lucky that he can get up on the sofa, as far as I'm concerned. Not because we mistreat him or anything, but anyone who owns a dog will know that, you know, the amount of dirt and rubbish that they drag into the house on a daily basis is just phenomenal. And we really just don't want any of that going, you know, up onto the beds. I don't really want it going up on the sofa, but, you know, my wife thinks it's very cosy to have him cuddle up with us on the sofa, so I kind of have to let that one go, really. Just hoover the sofa a lot. But yeah, I slept on the couch last night, because I just can't, when my wife and daughter aren't here, I just can't sleep in the bed. It's just too big, it's too lonely, I feel really unsettled. So I sleep on the couch, and quite often I'll leave the TV running just on a really low volume. I just think maybe, normally on the Discovery Channel actually, I fell asleep last night with when Bear Grylls was on the TV, which is a shame because I love that show, but I was so tired I just couldn't stay awake for it. But yeah, I just think the sound of the voices... in the background while I'm kind of falling asleep on the sofa. Just kind of eases that feeling of, you know, the house being so empty. The other thing I used to do, actually, was it used to be BBC News, World News, that was I'd have on the TV. But thanks to, that was a channel that you could always get for free over here. But thanks to UC, it's a channel that you have to pay for now. And we have enough channels as it is. And I tend to get my BBC News online as a result now. It's kind of annoying. It used to be BBC News that I'd play in the background and I'd fall asleep just watching news and catching up on what's going on and stuff. But now that's gone. It's Discovery Channel. But like I say, I can absorb my BBC News on the through my iPad. And I've started to use my iPad a lot more, actually. I've gone through this whole period. Sorry, this is a bit of a rambly boo, but there you go. These are all the thoughts on my mind. I've been through a period where I've not really been an Apple fan at all. I've used Windows and Linux and done all kinds of different weird and wonderful things as a computer setup. Along the way, I've always had the iPad and used it mostly for surfing and tweeting and checking email and stuff. But I've discovered recently, which of course I'm probably very late to discovering this, that there's a lot of really great apps available for the iPad now. Not games or anything, I'm not a gamer, but apps that are to do with media creation. For example, I've now downloaded the Hindenburg Field Recorder, which is made for the iPhone, but it works on the iPad just as well. And that'll work really well with the Hindenburg Journalist Pro that I've got on the Mac now. I haven't actually bought and paid for it, but I've got a trial running. And I'm already fairly sure that I'll probably end up getting the software because it just really is a neat piece of software. So those two really complement each other. I've also got a program called Storyboard Artist. And there's an iPad app for that where if I make storyboards on the Mac, I can throw them across to the iPad. View them on there if I'm wanting to show clients or even just have, you know, the storyboard with me while I'm out and about shooting and stuff. So I found there's a lot of apps. An Audioboo, of course, works really brilliantly on the iPad. It works like pants on the Android phone. It really is frustrating. And I think I've said this before. It's actually one of the apps that I really love using. I really enjoy Audioboo a lot. And it actually makes me want to switch back to having an iPhone, actually, just partly because of that. And also what I've come to realize now, from a multimedia point of view, because one of the things that I can do is I can code, I can make websites, I can do all that. It's one of the things I've learned to do. And I have a lot of thoughts about starting to make some apps. You can use something called PhoneGap. And basically make a website and PhoneGap will turn it into an app for you. It's a bit more complicated than that, but that's basically what it does. And when it comes to the iPhone, of course, you have a pretty consistent environment. So if it looks good on the, in my experience so far, if it looks good on the on the emulator, on the desktop of the Mac, because there's an emulator you can run when you're building those kind of apps, then you can be pretty darn sure that it's going to look very consistent when you throw it across to your iDevice. But when it comes to Android, there's so many different devices out there, and I know they're all running, you know, the same operating system or different versions of the same operating system and stuff like that. But you can never quite predict, because of the different specs of the devices and the screen sizes and all that kind of stuff, it becomes a little bit unpredictable developing apps for Android. I think that's why the iPhone, app-wise, really is become so popular, because for developers and for users too, because it has that consistent feeling all the way through. Whereas with Android, it's a little bit like the, you know, the Wild Wild West. You can make an app, and you can make an app using PhoneGap, just using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and a bit of SQLite and stuff. And, you know, you can make the app, but you can't quite predict how it's going to look when it actually hits the device. Because you can make it look nice, say, on your Android device, but then if somebody else loads it on their Android device, and it's a completely different device, different manufacturer, different screen size, different everything, then you can never quite know whether it functions 100% on that other device. Whereas, of course, with the iOS environment, you know, it's consistent across the board. So, suddenly snapped with me in the last few days that I'm kind of becoming an Apple fanboy again, that because I haven't been that for a long time. That I really enjoy the consistency of it. It means you can kind of just get on with the stuff that you need to do. Whereas when it comes to Linux in particular, I love Linux. I love the idea of Linux. I'd really love to keep using it. But when it comes to producing media in particular, it becomes really, really difficult because a lot of the codecs and things that you use are proprietary. And it just becomes really, really difficult to, you know, you find yourself struggling against the software a little bit to get things done. Particularly when it comes to video, there's not really a decent video editor available exclusively on Linux. There's some cloud services that are popping up now that I'm going to start to investigate. But I think I've kind of made the decision now that, you know, that I'm going to stay with Mac now. I'm going to stay with Apple strictly because, you know, getting things done on an Apple computer is just easy. You're not struggling against the computer all the time, really. Occasionally you are, of course, but most of the time you're not really struggling against the computer to get things done. You load the software, it works, mostly, and you know, it really is, you know, that kind of consistent feel means you can just concentrate on getting things done rather than worrying about or fighting against the actual system itself or some of the configuration of the system itself, which you do sometimes find on Linux, you know, to get things done. And this, I think, is particularly relevant for media production, audio and video. Of course, you've got Audacity that's available on Linux, and that's a really good program for producing audio. It's also available for Mac as well. But then when you move across to Mac, there's also a lot of other tools available for producing audio, and a lot of tools available for producing video. And that's, you know, the path of least resistance to get your job done is the one that I really want to start using now. And also, I'm also thinking long-term. You know, now that I'm kind of making the decision to start moving out into the freelance world, doing it properly this time, doing it where I'm not, you know, looking for clients in all the wrong places and making all the mistakes that I've made in the past when I've kind of done that. I used to do a lot of jobs completely for free, for example, just because I wanted to do it. And at that stage, you know, I could do it, really. You know, I didn't have a family. I had, you know, my wife and I were living together. We weren't married at the time, but we'd been living together for a really long time before we got married. You know, and we had a base amount of money coming in. So if I did have kind of the freedom to do stuff that I wanted to, do stuff for free. But I did get, it did get to the point where I certainly found people were starting to take advantage of that. I get people come to me and say, "Oh, Greg, can you do this? We've got no money." I kind of became known at that stage for the guy that you could come to if you couldn't afford to actually hire someone. And it was a trap. You know, I fell into that trap, and it got to a point where I just had to say, stop. Or at least I got to the point where a lot of those people who were coming to me, I actually said to them, I don't work for free anymore. And in my mind at that time, saying that, I thought saying that would actually make them say, okay, I can pay you a bit of money. But it actually didn't. All of those people that were my friends and colleagues and people who we enjoyed working together and stuff, the minute I turned around and said, I don't work for free anymore, you have to pay me some kind of money. Might not have to be full rates, but you have to come up with something. They disappeared. They just stopped coming. And that really demonstrated to me, I was kind of looking for work and looking for colleagues in all the wrong places. And also that very much demonstrated to me that I'd become known as the guy that you could go to if you actually didn't have any money or you couldn't afford to hire somebody else. And I'm determined now not to make that same mistake again. It doesn't mean I'm not going to do projects that I want to do. There are a lot of things I'm thinking about now that I want to do, but they will be my projects on the whole. Or projects that are set up in a way where we try and find money or we find ways to monetize them. And it doesn't have to be monetizing them in a big way. It just has to be some kind of way to say, how can we raise money to keep this going? That's really where I'm at now. So that was a long boo, where I went from one thought to another to another. Starting out from me just wanting to tell you that I'd slept on the couch last night and all the weird reasons why. And then it's moved into probably the main thing that's on my mind at the moment, which is the whole idea of going freelance. I originally did want Red Web to offer me a job, but I am thinking now that the idea of being their video guy but being freelance probably does give me a certain amount of freedom that will probably suit me very well, because it does give me the opportunity to be my own man. You know, I can pursue work elsewhere. I can decide to do some of the things or the ideas that I want to pursue and figure out ways to monetize those. For example, I want to start producing audiobooks, actually. So, you know, starting out probably with a few of my own works. And then maybe moving on to helping others produce their works. But doing it in a way where we figure out some way to monetize that. We also want to start producing some audio documentaries. Video documentaries, great. Of course, eventually I also want to do that. But there's something I think really special about producing an audio documentary, actually. Especially nowadays, because you can produce kind of enhanced audio where you can embed a lot of photos and links and all kinds of other stuff. I think audio, video, of course, we're all aware is something that's really big on the internet at the moment. But audio, I think, is coming along. You know, SoundCloud is really popular now. Audioboo is a really good platform. For example, the Flip app on the iPhone, iPad, they've just integrated audio into that app. And I really, you know, so while you're actually flicking your Twitter stream and looking at all the news and interesting things that are coming on your Twitter stream, you can actually listen to audio from SoundCloud, for example, while you're doing it. So I think people are really starting to realize now the power of audio, that audio allows you to multitask a little bit more. So you could sit there, you could, for example, if I make an audio documentary, you could actually sit there and listen to my audio documentary while you're working, while you're surfing the web, while you're doing other things. And to be honest, I think a lot of people actually do that with video. For example, if it's someone doing a video blog where they're just talking at the camera, there's no real need most of the time to actually be watching that person. So quite often I found what I do is I'll click play, and if I know it's someone who's just talking to the camera and telling me stuff, then I'll just listen and go off and start doing some other things on the net while I'm listening. And then, of course, if I hear something where I think, oh, I have to see that, I'll switch back. So I think it's kind of coming around. I really think audio is going to kind of start to rise on the internet now, and become as an equal as an equal kind of equal in popularity, or at least pretty close to video, because I think people are starting to realize now that audio allows you to take in information but at the same time multitask, whereas video doesn't quite allow you to do that unless it's a very special circumstance. All right, I'm still on the couch under the duvet. It's 10 to 11, and I'm going to go and get some breakfast, walk the dog, and then start getting on with continuing my main assignment, which has to be in 2 weeks, which is making the podcast Transmedia for the Rest of Us. And I think I've decided last night while I was lying there falling asleep, and this morning when I woke up, kind of just with things rolling around my mind, that I might actually take all the podcast episodes for my final project, and rather than kind of present them as a series of podcasts in that particular project, I might actually cut them all together into just one long audio documentary, actually. I think it will be much easier for the teachers to kind of take it in that way. And also, you know, every 20 minutes or 15 minutes, or, you know, the episodes are all different lengths. It'll be very repetitive with me saying, hi, my name's Greg McQueen, I'm a multimedia design student, blah, 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 blah. So I'm thinking if I could cut it together in a way where it's more like a documentary where I cut all that out and it's continuous and it tells a whole situation and story about transmedia, that I think that'll be a bonus for the teachers when they get my project. All right, going to go and get some breakfast now, a cup of tea, and sort myself out and start getting on with some of the things I need to do for today.